Blog Talk Radio.
Check her out. That will be lovely, and she'll be speaking
let me see here. Like I said, next weekend, and then it's another event coming up in November that she'll be speaking at, and I'll post all of that on the wall. But that's with Freedom From Religion Foundation, the one in November. So excellent. And so, you know, our thoughts are with her. And it's just, it's been interesting. And again, guys, you know, it's just, it's important that we support one another. It's extremely important that we support one another going forward, because, you know, it's not easy out here. And, you know, it's always nice to see other non-believers, especially, you know, people that you can relate to, people that you interact with on a, you know, consistent basis. It's always nice to see you guys there. So just wanted to kind of let you know about that. Want to talk about the next few shows that are coming up. Today we're going to be talking about apathy and bandwagoning, but actually my thoughts are kind of all over the place today. And so we're going to be talking about several things, but I've been kind of agitated about some things for months. In May, you know, I just really got full, if you will, regarding some things, and I kind of see it coming back. So, you know, let's talk about it. Let's talk about what's happening, what we're doing, what we're not doing. It's just, we have to talk about these things, because it's going to come to a point where you're going to see people dropping off. You're going to say, what happened to so-and-so? What happened to this person? What happened to that person? What happened to this organization? What happened to that organization? And there are varying reasons for that. You know, for the most part, it's because of the lack of support, if you will. So, let's see here. This show is Apathy and Bandwagoning. Next week on RSS Feed, Raina's show, which is next Saturday at noon, we will be talking about conspiracy theories. It's part two of our conspiracy theory series. And we'll be talking about 9/11 and JFK. And even though they should be separate shows, we're just going to go ahead and condense the two. So we'll be talking about that next Saturday at noon, as well as Sunday at noon. We're just going to do a two-parter and work in tandem. So that's how we'll be able to get through both of those there. The show after that would be Cognitive Dissonance in Religion. I want to talk about that a little bit more. And the week after that, we'll be talking about atheism, atheism plus, social justice, so on and so forth. So, yeah, we want to talk about these things, because there are people out there that do not know what atheism plus is. And, you know, I'm just getting read up and a little bit more familiar with it as well. So I just wanted to kind of explain some of it to people so that you can kind of get a better understanding as to what's happening out here in the community. You have people that are for it. You have people that are against it, pros and cons on both sides, and we'll discuss that as well. And the week after, well, I'm going to say the week after that, but some of the upcoming series, we're going to be finishing off the race series, and it may get extended, but I think I'm only going to do one more show specifically dedicated to that. And the next biblical history show will be, Did Jesus Exist? Did he actually exist? And the one after that would be, Did the Exodus ever happen? And, you know, again, there's no archaeological information out there that can substantiate that the Exodus ever happened. As a matter of fact, Jewish scholars have all concluded that it never happened. So it's interesting. And the next biblical series after that, we'll be talking about symbolism, and in specifics here, we'll be talking about the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, we'll be talking about, you know, how In God We Trust made it to the coins. We'll talk about what happened in the 1950s, what happened when people were fearing communism, and how religion was reinforced. So we'll be talking about all of those things. So it should be interesting. It should be interesting. You know, we have a lot of information out there that we definitely want to share with you guys. I think William's here. Is that you, William?
Yes.
Hey, William.
How you doing there?
Hey, good. William, everybody, this is Father Teresa William, and he is part of the Black Free Thinkers family. And, you know, he will be joining us today, and, you know, it's exciting. and we appreciate it. And, you know, again, we're here to, you know, encourage you and to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you.
Yeah, we walk by sight, not by indoctrination.
Exactly.
by experience and interaction.
Exactly. And it's just important that we talk about these things. And, you know, it's just a lot going on out here. Many of us, we're just dealing with some things. And it's just, it's important that, you know, we're here for one another. And we already have people, we have people wanting to be a part of the conversation already. Interesting. But, you know, again, as we go along, you know, I want to go ahead and start defining some of this terminology. So let me define the terminology, and then we'll open up the phone line. So guys, give me a few minutes here, okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm talking about apathy. And, you know, basically, you know, apathy is a state of indifference or the suppression of emotions such as concern, excitement, motivation, and passion. And an apathetic individual has an absence of interest in or concern about emotion, social, spiritual, philosophical, and or physical life. You know, now to me that kind of, you know, points to depression a little bit, but, you know, again, not necessarily. So, you know, it's just interesting, you know, how all of this comes about, and I'm going to define bandwagon. And bandwagon, in and of itself, it means a cause or party that attracts increasing numbers of adherents. So an example is young voters climbing aboard the party's bandwagon. And another definition is a current trend. And, you know, I'm giving you these definitions for a reason, but I also want to give you the definition for bandwagon effects. So the bandwagon effect is a well-documented form of groupthink in behavioral science and has many applications. The general rule is that conduct or beliefs spread among people as fads and trends clearly do, with the probability of any individual adopting it increasing with the proportion who have already done so. So as more people come to believe in something, others also hop on the bandwagon, regardless of the underlying evidence. And the tendency to follow the actions or beliefs of others can occur because individuals directly prefer to conform. There's that word, conform, or experiment, or because individuals derive information from others. So both explanations can be used for evidence of conformity in psychological experiments. And so, you know, again, there's that word conform. We've talked about it in the past, and, you know, definitely needs to be explored a little bit more. And then I'm also going to give you all the seven stages of grief. And there's a reason why I'm doing this, because, like I said, my thoughts are all over the place. And there are many things that we are definitely going to talk about, and this is going to be one of them. So the seven stages of grief are shock or disbelief, denial, bargaining, guilt, anger, depression, and acceptance and hope. Okay, and so these symptoms of grief can be emotional, physical, social, and in some cases, religious in nature. So, again, we're going to talk about these things. I just think it's important that we kind of cover all of this because it's just so much happening. You know, so much happening. I posted a video today on my wall from a young lady, and she was talking about how she had gotten into an altercation with a Christian woman in Atlanta, and her name is Miss Maxie. And Miss Maxie, if you're out there, if you're listening, I just want you to know that our hearts and our thoughts are definitely with you. And that video, I must say, it was honest and it was brutal. And, you know, I felt her passion. I felt her hurt. I felt her pain. And I just want to tell her, and anyone else out here listening that's dealing with that, you know, your life was not wasted. It was, you know, decisions that we made. But get out here and tell your story so that maybe we can help some other people so that they won't have to spend 20, 30 years in the church. And then when they discover that it was a fraud, now they're dealing with all of these stages of grief. And, yes, you're going to deal with them regardless. But, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll be able to kind of hit them off at the pass, if you will. And, you know, it's just interesting because, you know, I want to address that video because it really, you know, kind of expressed some of the things that I felt. And, you know, when I got out of religion and, you know, again, man, you know, I'm just going to go with the notes that I wrote here. And my whole thing is to Christians, and this is specifically to Christians, believers, you know, Muslims, whoever, whatever you are, if you're a believer, you know, a spiritual person, whatever. But, I mean, how do you expect us to feel? But I know you can't answer that because you're still in religion. Your thoughts are still there. Your head is there. But for those of us that have made, you know, these discoveries or had these epiphanies and we walked away and we're upset and we're angry and, you know, in some cases depressed, we have all of these different emotions going on, how do you expect us to feel? You know, that's like, you know, waking up one day and finding out your whole life was a fraud. It was a fake, like that young lady who was kidnapped and was raised by that woman and then went online and discovered that she had been kidnapped. So her whole life, you know, was fraudulent. How do you expect, you know, it's just, it's amazing. But you, how do you expect us to feel? And, again, you know, you have these people here, and, you know, they are proclaiming their love for Jesus. We have Travis on the line, too. But they're proclaiming their love for Jesus. And, you know, when you grow up as a believer, you know, you're singing all these love songs to God and to Jesus. How do you expect us to feel when we find out he never existed? I mean, seriously. It's amazing. You know, so how can you love someone who doesn't exist? And in her video, she was talking about, you know, how she relied on God, how she relied on Jesus. And, you know, that was all the hope that she had. That was all she had to depend on. And then that was taken away from her when she did the research and she found out that he did not exist. Again, how do you expect us to feel? I mean, yeah, someone in the room said they're still pissed that Santa Claus didn't exist. That was a lie. And that's the truth. You know, when you tell your kids that or when the kids realize it, you see the grief, you see the anger, you see the hurt on their faces when they realize that Santa Claus did not exist, nor did the Tooth Fairy, nor did, you know, any of those other characters that we grew up with. And then also now, again, coming into your personal account, How do you think it makes us feel that we were devoted to a God that did not exist? Absolutely sold out and devoted. Gave up educational opportunities, gave up relationships, gave up career advancements, gave up a lot of things because we were devoted to a God that did not exist, that we were basically in some cases forcibly indoctrinated as children. And then you're also devoted to a pastor. Now, how do you think that makes a person feel that that the pastor or minister that they were devoted to lied to them all that time and used them for money? Now, again, you have different people in these churches that are called building workers, and they'll go to the pastor's house and they'll clean up, they'll go pick up his dry cleaning. I mean, basically, they were his personal slaves, if you will, and that's how I see that. And then you have what's called honor bearers, which are basically the pastor's bodyguard, his security detail. And these people are devoted, devoted to a God, devoted to a pastor, a minister. And then when they find out that this God does not exist, that Jesus did not exist, and that they were basically slaves, indentured servants, how the hell do you think that's supposed to make them feel? Seriously. And you can't understand why we have some anger and why we're upset and why we're out here telling you guys to stop it, you know. But then I'm also pointing the finger at the people in the non-believing community, in the, you know, atheist community. What the hell? You're out here and you're telling people that, you know, this God does not exist, that Jesus does not exist, but yet the communities that are most religious-based or highly religious have the most crime, has the most teenage pregnancies, has the most, you know, economic and educationally disadvantages. What are we doing? What the hell are we doing? Are we going back into the community to try to help them? Because, see, once that religion is gone, and some of these people, when they realize they don't have that, some of us, we take that anger and we turn it inside towards ourselves, which is where some of the depression comes from. But there are some people out here that project that anger, and they're going to become even more violent. They're going to become even more pathological in nature. You know, and, you know, to be honest with you, I've been saying this for a long time, but I believe that Christianity in general, it breeds sociopaths. And basically they tell them that whatever you do, God has to forgive you if you go to him and ask for forgiveness, but everybody else has to forgive you too. So these same people commit the same crimes or even more heinous crimes, thinking that it's okay because they're going to be forgiven, and they don't give a shit about you and your feelings and your physical well-being. They just want what they want. Now, some of those people, they're lost causes, but there are some that truly do not know better. But what are we doing? Are we going back into the community? You know, what's going on here? And then also going back to, you know, the young lady's video, you know, and, you know, being devoted, you know, to a God that does not exist. All those years, you're taking all this bullshit from people. You're just taking it and you're dealing with it. You know, because you were told to forgive and to judge not. And you're dealing with bullshit and you're taking all this crap from people because you felt that you had to. And you didn't have to. So, you know, you have all those emotions wrapped up in it as well. And it's like, you know, what the hell is really going on? What the fuck is going on both sides? And so, yeah, I'm pissed off. You know, I'm pissed, you know, and I'm just sitting back and I'm tripping because, like I said, I've been dealing with this, dealing with, you know, trying to figure out what the hell is really going on this side of the equation. I already know what's happening over there on that side. I've been a part of that. Now I'm over here, and it's like, you know, what's going on? What are we doing? Where are we going? What the hell? You know, cause I'm not understanding it. You know, and then going back to the young lady's video, you know, again, she was talking about how, you know, she felt that her life was wasted because, you know, she didn't, you know, she doesn't have a husband, she doesn't have children, you know, her job security, you know, all of those things. And she let all those things pass by. And, again, going back to, you know, religion, they'll tell you, you know, that you're supposed to date someone that you are equally yoked with, someone in the church, preferably the local church that you attend. Or if you date someone that goes to another church, you know, in most cases the woman was expected to leave her church to follow her husband to his church, you know. And, again, you know, some of these people were actually really trying to live Christianity. I remember when I was part of it, I tried to live it. You understand? And I gave up relationships. You know, it's just crazy. And then when I was younger, I was forced into it, you know, lost educational opportunities because my mother was adhering to the religion. It's just nuts, absolutely nuts. I've known people to give up jobs. I've known people to give up everything that they owned. They gave up houses, cars, jobs, careers, all of that to move or to follow behind some pastor or some church. Now imagine how they're going to feel when they wake the fuck up and they find out that this was a fraud. So what are we doing? So, I mean, you know, I posted some links earlier about some atheist charities, and again, you have Recovering from Religion, the other, I forgot the name of the other organization, but it's like, you know, Beyond Grief, something Beyond Grief. And they help people that have left religion, you know, to kind of cope. And their support, and people are going to need that. But they're going to need more than just support, you know, someone talking to them. They're going to need more than that. They're going to need, you know, financial support. They're going to need, you know, emotional support, and that's what these groups are giving them. But, you know, I posted the links to atheist charities, and I see you, Chicago. I'm not ignoring you. You have these different charities out here, and you have all these different, you know, we donate money, you know, in general, atheists, You know, they donate money. They've been giving money and all of that. But, you know, sometimes it's more than just money. You know, sometimes people just need a word of encouragement. There are some that don't have money to donate to these different charities and organizations. Sometimes taking 10 minutes out of your life to just sit down and write a nice little note to tell them that you appreciate them and what they're doing. Sometimes those words of encouragement goes a long way. So, you know, this is just something for you all to think about. But anyway, you know, I'm going to get off this soapbox here. And,
yeah, that was a fantastic monologue there. That was, I want to isolate that audio and put it behind a rock and roll instrumental. Like, I really want to do that. That was real. That was hardcore.
But you know, my whole thing is that it's more to this. You know, the one thing that the majority of us have in common is the fact that we do not believe in a deity. Okay, that's what atheism is. I understand that. But it's more to this than that. It's more to life than believing in a deity and not believing in a deity. Okay? We have real people out here that are hurting. Real people that are hurting. Look at that woman's video, just the anger and the hurt and the depression. I mean, I felt it through the video screen. I don't know about you guys, but I say go and take a look at it. And, you know, I'm wishing her nothing but the best, but, you know, she's not the only one out there that feels that way. And that's what I'm trying to reiterate. So, you know, we have a few people on the line. We're going to bring them into the conversation. We have 773 who's been holding for a while, and I thank them for their patience. May we ask who's calling?
Cheryl, 773?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. Ask who's calling. How are you?
Hi, this is Cheryl.
Cheryl
Purnell?
Yes, ma'am. Well, thank you for calling the show, Cheryl. For those of you out there, Cheryl is a member of Black Nonbelievers of Chicago, you know, my local organization here. And she's one of my cherished members here. So thank you for calling,
thank
Cheryl.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Oh, that's nice. Check's in the mail.
But, yeah, you know, so we're talking today about apathy and bandwagoning and, mm-hmm. and a variety of other different, you know, topics. I have Travis on the line. I have William on the line. I may as well go ahead and pull in 804. May we ask who's calling from 804?
How y'all doing today? This is Deborah from Richmond.
Hey, Deborah. Welcome back. Thank you for calling in. And Deborah is a caller, and she's been calling in consistently, and we thank her for the support and the information that she shares with us. It's much appreciated. Thank you so much. And everybody in the chat room, everybody.
I thank y'all.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Everybody's on the thank you bandwagon. What are we going to do? Okay, let's get real. The reason why it's hard, Kim, one of the reasons is because the numbers are so great. When everybody is still stuck in that imaginary God, religion thing, and there's a lot of people, I mean, deep stuck, and you don't know how stuck they are until you get out, okay?
Exactly.
And they don't know how stuck they were until they can step out. And it is so hard to be able to, you know, it's like trying to convince somebody who's been sitting at a slot machine for a day and a half that it ain't going to pay out. They got to keep putting coins in the machine every Sunday. They got to, because they've been doing it. It's all they know. And it's so hard.
Exactly.
How do you do that without being mean? How do you do it and give them some other place to be? Now, can we have some other place for them to be when, like you said, the only thing we have in common is that we ain't believing that, and that's not really something in common, a disbelief or a position of being unconvinced of some bullshit, as you might say.
Right?
I'm really surprised you were cussing so much. That was beautiful. you had me rolling. I was like, is Kim really cussing? Am I going to be able to say motherfucker today? I can't believe this is going to be good. but basically, I just been, Kim, what blows my mind, and there's so many layers, right? So when you look, like, I always talk like political, right? So when you look at the attack on women's rights and attack on gay persons' rights, it all starts from that book. So until you can for lack of a better word, attack the bull in that book and be able to break it down in some kind of logical way. But then that doesn't work because people are so illogical in their thinking. Then what do you do? And all I can do is just keep doing it. Okay, like I told somebody a minute ago, when they were asking me, I said, well, look, I said, if God didn't want me to think, then why did she give me a thinker?
Right?
And it's up to the God to be able to convince me and my little brain that what is happening is by that God, and it ain't happening, and it ain't true, and it couldn't possibly be true, but people are so stuck. And they've been stuck for so long, man. It's not crazy. It's bigger than crazy glue. They're stuck. And even if they do stick their toe out, it's so frightening to come from the comfort of delusion. It's hard. People are after decades. You got to be able to admit that your mama and your daddy were wrong. Who can do that?
Yes. And see, that's where a lot of the conflict comes in, right? Because, I mean, you know, let's just say, you know, I'm just going to give you a real-life example. This is something that I went through when I was in a relationship many years ago, and this person had a teenage child. The teenage child could not necessarily take it out on their parents. You know, they were angry at the parents, but who did they take it out on? They took it out on me. And so the same thing in regards to, you know, religion, you know, people, you know, they see the discrepancies. They see the holes in this story. They know it's not lining up and it's not making any sense. But, you know, instead of walking away from religion and getting angry at the right thing, which is that it's a false religion, that it does not exist, there is no God, you know, what do? They take it out on other folks. You know, because in the back of their mind, like she was saying, she's still holding out and hoping that there is, you know, something out there, that there is some type of, you know, creator or whatever. But for the most part, she doesn't believe. And a lot of them, you know, they don't want to step out of their comfort zone because, you know, change is scary. And that's one thing that a lot of believers will say, that they believe in religion because it's consistent, that it does not change. It is always the same. They know exactly what to expect, and they know what to expect every time. You know,
but it does change, Kim. It does change.
From the beginning, it changed. It always changed.
Yeah. I mean, religion only claims the space that science and logic lets it have still. So religion used to have to pay the priest to pray for your crops, to pray that you have a safe journey, to pray that you are healed. But now they don't have medicine. They don't have, farming. All they got is your soul. That's all they got. It's something later on. No priest can tell you what to do here. They tell you how to get someplace else. And that by itself is part of their pimp game. It's mind-blowing.
Okay. Can I just interrupt here? This is Cheryl. I kind of wanted to get to the topic, sort of. I mean, not that we haven't been talking about the topic, and everybody's real eloquent and states their case, but I want to understand something about the title. And my interpretation of what the title is, Apathy versus Bandwagon, to me, it means that there's kind of a system that's operating in a very small polar kind of an excursion. In other words, the absolute the absolute opposite end is radicalism on both ends, okay?
Right.
But what I'm thinking about is when you are in a small spot between center and, you know, 2 inches for the right and 2 inches from the left, what is in that gap? Indifference is worse than hate, but it's less active, okay? And then the bandwagon is the same thing as being really crazed, but it's, again, a sense of inaction. So I guess what I'm looking at in terms of the title, and this is how I kind of interpret it, is what is in that little space between indifference, being completely not caring, and the bandwagon, which is an adherent, but it's not necessarily an active part. Each of these phrases, each of these words denotes a non-action, a not.
Exactly.
Do you understand what I'm saying? In other words, they're polar opposites, but they're polar opposites in a very small excursion of the pendulum moving back and forth. And
right.
I guess what I thought we were going to, the conversation is free flowing, but I was wondering about addressing, not to hijack what's going on, what is in that little gap between indifference and mindlessness of just falling in a bag or attaching yourself to a bandwagon. Do you understand what I mean?
I understand perfectly. And when I put it together, and that's, you know where I was coming from, basically,
mm-hmm.
I guess my question to a lot of people, and just in general, and that's
mm-hmm.
on both sides of the equation here, because, again, we see this in Christianity quite a bit, and I'm starting to see it on this side,
mm-hmm.
the bandwagon. Are you a non-believer because it's the end thing to do? It's the end thing to do. A lot of people are proclaiming non-belief or atheism
mm-hmm.
or free thinking. But
mm-hmm.
then once you get over here, now your eyes are open. You can
mm-hmm.
see what's happening over there. You can see what's happening in the communities. And yet we still have quite a few people sitting on their laurels and not wanting to do anything. And, again, the atheism, what we have in common is the non-belief. But, again, as I said earlier, there's more to it than that. These communities are still, falling apart. And so that's where the apathy comes in. What are
mm-hmm.
we going to do to try to make things better? Or are we going to still sit back on our laurels and still, look at them and say, well, we hope that your Jesus works it out for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so in so many words, is it acceptable
mm-hmm.
that we respond and act the same way that believers do? And that
right.
means non-action. Go ahead.
Right,
yeah,
and I completely agree with that. Both of these stances just involves a passivity,
mm-hmm.
But
exactly.
they're passive in two different directions, and there's nothing less active than a type of, non-moving or non- Oh, what am I trying to say? Non-changing, static.
Right.
There's
mm-hmm.
a static position. There's a static type of a quality to apathy and hopping on a bandwagon. You don't have to actively do anything. So where are the non-believers who aren't part of an active sense of being? I guess. It's kind of how I interpreted the title.
For some people aren't active because they know for themselves if they're coming to the non-belief spot isn't some quick, trendy thing. It took, 10 years from the spark from the spark of, one of the things that helped me get out of it was I thought to myself one day, I was like, wait a minute, if God made everything, and God made hell, I don't want to be around a motherfucker making hells, And then it might have been 5 years later, and then, I saw George Carlin break down the Ten Commandments. I'm like, yep, that makes sense, and then you keep pulling yourself away, and you start
mm-hmm.
to only go on church on holidays, and then you just stop altogether, and
mm-hmm.
then you start trying to, well, there got to be something else out there, and you start looking at the other religions. Well, that shit's all the same, Or there's no real answer there. There's no proof in any of the holy books
mm-hmm.
of anything being written that was not knowledge available to the time of the people when it was written.
Mm-hmm.
Hope that makes sense to
yeah.
people.
So you're just sort of sliding into, a position, not actively taking the bold step, coming out, making it – a big piece of your life rather than just a, I don't believe, okay, sure,
Right, yeah, some people are like, that. Yeah, women should have rights, but I'm not going to go march.
Exactly.
Everybody doesn't do that, but for, you know, me, I decide, I'm going to take my time and figure out how to turn it into jokes. Last night I told the crowd, I said, you know, when somebody says, I'll pray for you, what they're really saying is, I ain't going to do shit.
Exactly. And that's the reason I was talking about the apathy. And I'm like, we're saying it on this side. We're just not saying, I'm going to pray for you. But
exactly.
That are back and not doing anything. And so, again, you know, so my question is, are you an atheist or a non-believer or a free thinker, or is it a fad? Are you on a bandwagon? What's going? Because now you know better. You don't have the same excuses that some of these believers have. The ones that are devout and the ones that truly believe, and we're trying to educate and inform them. You know, they get quite of a pass because you know we're trying to break through. We're trying to get some information to them. But the ones that have come over to this side of the equation and that have accepted and understand what we're telling them, and you're still sitting back and doing nothing, I'm going to come down a little harder on them. And I'm not saying that anyone has necessarily an obligation or a responsibility, but in the same breath, I don't want to hear you complaining about the social ill. What are you complaining about? You're not doing anything to help.
You got to help. You know, when you said the thing about being in the middle, I wrote this last week, I was like, look, when you're in the middle of right and wrong, you're way too close to the wrong.
Ambivalence means no.
Exactly. And so, you know, it's just, it's important, you know, that, you know, we address these things and we, you know, figure out. And I mean, again, you have some people and, you know, I've seen this, you know, again, they're bringing some of that religiosity mindset over to this side of the equation. So there's still a lot of education that needs to be done and a lot of informing that needs to be done on this side of the equation too. Just because these people no longer believe in a deity, they still have to unlearn some of the things that they've learned. And that's all of us, and we're all still evolving. We're all still growing, and that's why it's important that we share the information, that we don't hoard the information, and we share the resources with one another, and that we actually get out here. Now, it's going to take some time to build things up. It's going to take some time to galvanize, you know, people's excitement, galvanize the resources, galvanize, you know, just our being out here in the community and to, you know, become a part of the community. But in the meantime, you know, I feel that we should be, again, educating ourselves, informing ourselves, and teaching one another. And that's why I'm looking, you know, at our community over here on this side of the equation. And I'm like, you know, what's going on? And, you know, I'm not questioning anybody's non-belief or anything like that. I'm just saying it's more to life than believing or not believing. You know,
exactly.
For many of us, we live, you know, we live in these neighborhoods. You know, we're in Chicago here. And as you all watch the news, we're dealing with a lot of murders. We're dealing with a lot of social issues. So, and this is not the only city. This is happening all over. Ironically, these are highly religious neighborhoods. What are we doing now?
A church on every corner.
Exactly. A church
on every corner. I'm sorry, what was that? I didn't hear that. I'm sorry.
No, I did it. A church on every corner.
Yeah,
on every corner.
Well, if churches don't pay property tax,
not a couple.
If churches don't pay property tax, then anyone who does pay property tax is paying the salary of the priest, and the churches will own all the property. That's from the 1800s, Robert Greene Ingersoll.
Oh,
geez.
That's why I think they ought to shut the hell up when it comes to anything dealing with government. They ain't paying no taxes.
They don't belong.
You understand what I'm saying? Shut the hell up, you know?
Yeah.
The reason why, you know, I mean, I don't forget who it was that said separation of church and state. That's the way it's supposed to be, straight up. But they don't make so many mistakes over the centuries. It's been so many mistakes made by the church. They need to shut the hell up.
Yeah, and you know, ironically, today is Pulpit Freedom Sunday, which basically you are going to have pastors all over the country speaking from their pulpit and addressing specific candidates' issues in politics head on. And they're going to tell their people who they feel they should vote for. And I posted a link to a Facebook event. And what's happening is, and again, I've stated this on several different occasions, and I'm stating it again today, and I stand on this. And this is something that I will support and that I will be doing. But basically, the pastors and the ministers that are violating their 501c3s by endorsing specific candidates, we need to start challenging those 501c3s and forcing the IRS to do their job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so exactly. And so tomorrow, you know, basically what this, you know, event is doing is encouraging people to go to these churches, videotape it. And, I mean, you don't even really have to do that. Most of these people are broadcasting on the radio, on the Internet, and you'll get the proof there. But we need to contact our state, quote-unquote, taxpayer advocate to report these systemic violations, if you will. And I've posted that on my Facebook wall yesterday, and I just posted it in the room. But we need to challenge them. And they even gave us the form to fill out. So it is called, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say, and not be intimidated by the level of support on the other side. It's formidable.
Exactly. Right.
And that's where support is, right. That's where our support for each other comes. You know, that's
exactly.
Where,
exactly.
Right. Sorry, I didn't mean to just break in, you know.
Oh, no, Cheryl, no, you're right. Go ahead, finish your point.
Oh, no. That was it.
Yeah.
And that support for them is blind. Like, I'd love to go to a Pentecostal and ask them, well, how would you feel if a Catholic got favor and now you have to pray to the Virgin Mary when you're not supposed to pray to statues and what have you? Or go to a Baptist and be like, well, how would you feel leaving your son alone with a Catholic priest? You know, like you guys don't want one church to win over the others, and because right now they feel like they're a unit as those that believe in the deity against us. But if they were to win again, it's going to be like Europe back in you know, thousands of years ago when they're just different religions fighting each other.
Can I ask a question? You know, down here we got a community station that shows Farrakhan on it, right? Now I'm not up there, so I that's why I'm asking, 'cause I can't get nobody. How come he reading from a Bible now?
Minister Louis Farrakhan, is he?
Yeah,
so that's where the money is.
Seriously, have y'all seen that up there? 'Cause I mean, it shows it down here, right? You know, when he has his, you know, you get up there, like a pastor. I don't know even what, I guess I can't call him none of this. He's reading from a Bible, and he's been doing
really?
That for a while.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
What I'm saying is,
what brought that on?
Farrakhan
has been
reading from
the
Bible for a while.
So, like, he's been
reading from the Bible for a while. And he's always, you know, spoken to the Christian community. He can quote scriptures better than most Christian preachers. But, you
exactly.
know, and again, you know, from my, you know, knowledge and from what I've read, he's teaming up with Scientology. And Scientology
Oh, my God.
Like,
oh,
yeah.
my God.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. They already, see that to me, you know, when they talk about the one world, what is it, one world order? That's it.
Yep,
it.
You know, there was an article.
That's the one world order. All those religious people that came together. Your one
there was
world
an article,
order.
There was an article that said that the second to the Pope and some, was it like a chief rabbi or head rabbi or chief Muslim cleric? All those were teamed up, and the Catholics are already with the Mormons, teaming up to stop marriage equality. And I'm thinking to myself, what Muslim or Jew is going to listen to the Pope? That don't make any sense to me.
Right.
And then, and also, the truth is. whenever some bullies get together, the good people got to stand up. And I think that's what Kim's talking about. Because either, so you see, to me, when I look at, when I saw the bandwagoning, I thought people stay on the religious bandwagon, and then the people who are off are in an apathetic state because the task seems too large. Okay, but right. Unless we do something, for instance, you have somebody who say they're atheists, but they're still anti-women or misogynistic, or they aren't in a place where they want to share, and they're greedy still. So it is a way bigger problem. And you're talking about going over and filming people and thinking Kim got us gonna have us trying to be 21 Jump Street. New York undercover around here.
Right.
Now,
exactly.
I'm looking online, and it's that they're required to take Dianetics or be removed from leadership posts from the Muslim organization. What the hell is this? Oh, my God. Two bunches of crazy people.
Yeah,
and they're joining forces.
But again, follow the money.
Yeah.
Follow the money.
Oh, absolutely.
Money, because the majority of them in leadership, they do not believe, what they're professing. Because if they truly believe what they were professing, then we would not have the sex scandals. We would not have the misappropriation of funds. We would not have a lot of these issues. And then they continue to make the same mistakes or the same egregious mistakes, if you will, over and over. Because it's not a mistake. It's being done on purpose because the people have to forgive them. And they know that they can use those scriptures to manipulate the people's emotions and manipulate their thinking. And the thing is that tells me that they do not believe what they're saying, but they have to make you believe.
Right.
That's their job. Their job is
it's
to control.
Go ahead.
See, that's what it is. For sheep, you got to be sheep. You understand? That's what you're supposed to be. Sheep. When I saw that thing in there about overseer, I said, No.
Heck no.
I don't need no overseer.
Draw boss? No, heck no. Yeah.
No. No, I don't need. I just the one thing. This body right here can't deal with no overseer now. Okay, I can't do no chief.
But it's just it's interesting, because again, here we go. We're going to talk back, again about bandwagoning. It's like
there you go.
The example there. With the nation. Joining up with the Scientologists. Which is, the quote-unquote bastard Christian religion, if you will. So it's just when you start looking at all of that, again, is it bandwagoning? Are they jumping on that bandwagon? Because the Scientologists, when I say they have money,
they're rich as all get out.
And they know they got to come against what's happening. It's too much information, too much. It's too much evidence.
Negativity,
their stuff don't count. You understand that it's not real. So now, all of a sudden, they're going to get together so they can have a fight against the science and what's going on. That's telling the truth. They know they have to fight because they're losing too many people. They know that.
Exactly. And the whole thing, like I said, it's really interesting. 225, you dropped off. I was just about to pull you into the conversation, call back. But, it's just the whole thing is interesting. I'm just looking at it all just in general. And that's the reason why I'm looking over on our side of the equation. They're growing. They're already huge, but they're trying to grow. And even though the statistics and the surveys and all the information that's being released is showing that non-belief is growing, again, you have to deal with, the psychological, the sociological, and the behavioral aspect of it as well, because people will conform for the sake of conforming. It's easier in most people's minds to be a part of this group because it's the bigger group, and it shields and protects them. So it's about survival with some people. Other people, again, survival again. Their career, their livelihood, what have you. And, again, wanting to be accepted, you know, within their family and their friends. Mm-hmm. Again, these people were brought up in religion, and they've been going to the same church 3-4 generations deep. It's hard for them to leave that. And, again, you know, the social construct of it. What do we have to offer? Are we out here giving out bags of food? Are we out here? Do we have a recreation center? Do we have a community center? These are things that we should be working toward so that people will have an alternative. You know, we need to have offices out here so that we can have the CETA, so that we can help people with their light and gas mm-hmm. bills. All we need is a steady place to be where people can come in, bring their documents, we connect to the, you know, to the mainframe. And all, I mean, so, you know, we need to work on things on our side so that we can be a viable force in the community. And that's where the apathy comes in. You know, I'm tying it all in. It's a reason, it's a method to the madness here. And this is where the apathy comes in, because there are a lot of people out here that just don't give a shit. You know, and I mean, even, you know, in our organizations, I mean, there are some things that I want to do, some things, you know, that I'm trying to put in place, but we don't have enough people that want to participate.
Right.
Now, you know, if the party, if, you know, we're going to have a party or a social or something like that, But if I'm talking about business and things that we're trying to do to get into the community, oh, you can put my name on it, but I don't want to do nothing. Oh, so
I got something.
When it comes to some work, nobody wants to grab a shovel.
No.
Right? Hey, grab that rag. Hey, I got to go. I'll be back later, y'all.
Okay.
Oh, I got stuck.
It's been great. Okay. It's been great listening to you. Kim, let me ask you a question. This isn't an aside, but did you ever have an opportunity to meet with that that minister?
Oh, the bishop?
Yeah,
the bishop. We spoke a few times, and, you know, right now they just launched their cyber presence. So they're working on that. So right now we're kind of on hold for it, but once we make some more progress, I definitely will let you know. And, you know, what Cheryl is referring to is we're trying to set up a dialogue with a particular mega pastor. And so I've been talking back and forth with them, and that's something that's on the works, and that will be forthcoming. So it's in the works.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that would be kind of a reason sort of a conversation or debate or I just want to sort of make sure I understood. Sorry, I don't want to, you know, toss the conversation in a different direction, but that was something I wanted to ask as an aside, if you had a chance to talk with him or arrange anything. And the answer is yes and no. Okay.
Exactly.
Got it.
Because I have to go by their schedule, but then in addition to that, I also think that there's some trepidation there on their end.
You think?
And yeah, you know.
You think?
Yeah.
Huh.
So it should be interesting, you know, how all that falls in place. But when it does fall in place, you know, it's, you know, we're going to stream it so people can see the dialogue, and it's just going to be a beautiful thing because we'll be able to talk. But, yeah, so, you know, Cheryl, you know, we can talk about that a little bit more offline, more details. And that goes back to, you know, again, you know, with apathy. You know, we're trying to make inroads into the community. And, see, and this is where some of the pushback, you know, that I'm getting as far as, you know, in the free thought atheist community, I have people saying, why are you attempting to engage religionist theist believers? And the answer to that question is, if we're going to be a viable force, be a face, and remain in the black community, we're going to have to work alongside with some of these churches. And when I say that, I'm not saying that we have to adhere or adopt their ideologies or thought processes, but for the sake of the community, we should be able to get along and work together on some programs. For the sake of the community, we should be able to sit down and speak to each other in a civil manner and have a dialogue and be able to walk away from the table, you know, with, you know, agreeing to disagree, but still being able to sit down and, you know, speak to each other like we have some sense and sit down and eat a meal together and understand that this is not personal. Right. And that's where some of the conflict comes in. People take this personal when it's not necessarily personal. Me disagreeing with your ideology does not mean that I dislike you as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And we have to be able to differentiate.
But again, the whole thing about religion is so entangled with a personal identity. I've had people just get fighting mad with me. And it's like, I'm not attacking you. And on the other end of the spectrum, here we go with the spectrum. On the other end of the spectrum, I'm not attacking you yet. I'm happy to let you be who you are, misguided and non-blue-pilled, not red-pill-taking as you are. It's cool with me, I'm not chasing you around with a hammer, okay? We're just talking.
Exactly, exactly. And it's important that we are able to talk and we're able to dialogue. And, that's one of the things that, on the other side of the equation with the religionists, the believers, is, when I was over there and what I gathered and what I saw and experienced is they don't mind you talking as long as you're talking about what they want you to talk about.
Exactly.
Which is,
right.
Jesus is the best thing that ever happened to me, and I can get all my answers in the Bible.
Right. Right.
And the minute you start questioning things, then there's a problem because they'll tell you, you don't question God. You don't question a pastor. You just accept it for what it is, that blind acceptance, that blind faith. There's a quote out there, and I forget who said this, but they were like, I don't want to have faith. I want to know.
That's
you
right.
Know?
You want the truth.
Exactly.
That's what
exactly.
You want.
And that's why I think it's important that, we have, shows like this here, whereas we're putting the information out there. And that's why, just the, atheist free thought community as a whole, they want to get out to the community. But
they should want the truth, too.
Pardon?
They should want the truth, too. I mean, they said they love the stars.
Well, see, in their world, in their mind, they have the truth. And one thing that
as much stuff is going on, as much stuff is going on. You see how people have been crazy all during the world time, how they have tricked people, how they have put people down, all the different stuff they have did to harm people.
But the thing is, again, I mean, that goes back to the difference between obedience. And, because obedience is doing, what you're told in spite of what is the right thing.
Oh, sure, well, absolutely.
But the Bible tells you straight up, to seek and ye shall find. It tells you that.
Tells,
if you read the Bible, you'll see that.
But the thing is that I understand where you're coming from, Deborah, and I'm right there with you. And you would think, but again, a lot of them, they feel that they have the truth. And one of the things that I say to religionists when I'm talking to them, when we get to that little point there, and I say, you can have your own truth, but you can't have your own facts.
Mm-hmm.
See, your truth doesn't necessarily have
to
be a fact. Huh?
That's right. That's all I'm saying.
I'm right there with you, but again, that's why it's good to have, people like us around to educate
and
inform
no
them.
Now, it's no excuse now. My mama passed away in May. She was 91 years old. When she was a kid, they didn't even know what was going on in the next county. You have all the resources now. It's no excuse.
Mm-hmm.
What
do
you say about the light? The light is here.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And you have no excuse to find out what you need to find out.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly. And that's the beautiful thing about the technology that has come forth that the church was railing against initially, is that with this technology out here, the information is out here. And see, let's be patient. Let's be fair, Deborah. Some of these people are slowly starting to wake up. So we have, when I'm talking about
that's
the stages of grief.
That's kind of why I hold back. That's kind of why I've been holding back. Just like when you first started and you were saying how many people really depend on it. I ain't want nobody killing themselves over what I was saying because they done lost some teeth, you know. And I kind of had to stop myself for a few years. I had to hold back, you know, because I was some people. Just some things you go through make you stronger, and then some people they get weaker from it. And I didn't know how to handle that, you know, because some people are not going to be able to handle. That's all they depend on, you know. That what got them out of hell,
right?
You know, that's the way they feel. To me, I don't feel I've been through hell and came out
right.
of hell,
right?
And I feel that it was because of what was inside of me. Okay,
there you go.
As simple as that.
There you go. There you go. We're gonna bring a couple of more people into the conversation. 269, may we ask who's calling?
Oh, yes. Lunettoo is my name. Thank you for taking my call. Just listening to the conversation, one of the things that I've learned is the sister was talking about, you know, the unification factor outside of religion and beliefs. And one of the things I found that when you're talking to religious people, if they just know the history, the factual history of religions and belief systems, that is certainly a way of making the door at least disappear or open by itself, where there can be some dialogue. And like the sister said, you can have your own truth, but there's only one set of facts.
Exactly.
True.
So,
true.
Really, I think what we need to do is put religion and belief systems in a context of how do we rebuild our communities. Now, when you put them in that context, you'll see there's very little talk needed about religions. And I think
as part of that building process.
Yeah, there's very little.
Really?
Let me give you practical examples.
Sure.
Okay.
As far as economics, the laws of economics have very little to do with whether or not you believe in a God.
True.
The laws of education and the type of education we need to give to our kids, as we're just talking about on an academic level and a community level, has very little to do with a belief in God.
There are those on the opposite end of that spectrum who, A, homeschool, B, insist that the reason we're having the problems that we're having is because the educational system is godless. So there's one end of that spectrum that goes way beyond bandwagon.
Exactly.
That's what I say.
Okay.
Well, that's what like the sister says. There again, you're dealing with the difference between truth and facts.
But they don't do that.
Well, that's why I say, the sister had mentioned, what black people need to see is an alternative.
Exactly.
Meaning this.
Go all the way
that's
back
right.
to the beginning. They need to go all the way back to the beginning.
Well, their
beginning is Genesis in the Bible. That's not their beginning. They need to understand that's not their beginning. That's not our beginning.
Right, but see, I don't think he's talking about, you know, that there. What I think he's talking about when he says that we need to have an alternative is people need to know that, you know, basically come out of their linear and myopic thinking and know that they can think and live outside of that particular box that they've been indoctrinated to believe that is their existence. There's a big world out here. There's a lot to see. Now, when he's talking about the educational point of it, education, the education or the lack thereof has, you know, to a certain degree, nothing to do with religion. However, religion does have somewhat of an impact on it because I know people who were denied educational benefits because their parents forced them in some cases.
And look at
not
what they're reading
college,
in the books,
you know.
Man. Look at what's in the books. Look at what is in the books, man.
young ladies that were offered scholarships to college, but because of their religious upbringing, they could not go to college because their parents would not allow them to go.
Right.
And their parents would not fill out the financial aid forms, would not take them to where they needed to go in order to pursue their education because it went against their religion. Now, is that the fault of education in and of itself? No. But it was impacted by religion as far as, you know, them being able to, you know, attain, you know, higher education. But what the young man, I believe what he's saying is, you know, we have to get into the communities and basically try to make an impact, but try to make an impact that's not, you know, pertaining to religion or non-religion. It's just about caring about the people, giving them an alternative and showing them that there is more to life than what they've been taught and what they see, that it's a big world. Oh, honey, I'm right there with you. You know, but what I'm trying to do is on this side of the equation with the free thought, the atheist community, it's like many of us have the education, we have the knowledge. In some cases, we have the resources. We just have to do it. And that's where the apathy comes from. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm looking at some people and I'm like, are you a non-believer because you're just jumping on a bandwagon? And
right.
It's the end thing to do. It's the end thing to be. So, I mean, what the hell is going on? What's going on? Why are you here? What are you doing?
Yeah, I think that they're on the opposite side, and what falls into that gap that we discussed earlier between the two pieces, the two types of inaction, or, you know, laziness, I guess we could call it. What falls in that is a person who is unwilling to be the example. You know, for example, my family, when they all suspect, but, you know, I said, who doesn't know? And it's a matter of them seeing that I'm just the same old person I've always been. And
right.
I love you, and if you love me for who I am, I haven't grown a purple nose or anything, you know, or a horn in my forehead or anything. You know, I'm the same old person, you know.
Right.
And being willing to be that example, you know, is a piece of it. To step out, help to invite a stepping out of that comfort zone and to be more accepting of what we have to offer in a larger world.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Yeah. And if we are more accepting of one another and more accepting of ourselves, because in most cases I feel that some of the acceptance issues with some people is because they don't accept themselves.
Right.
You have to be able to love yourself and accept yourself before you can love and accept other folks.
Right, right.
So, you know, but, yeah, you know, it's important, but, you know, I believe that that will be part of the healing process, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that if we love and accept ourselves and we love and accept people as who they are and meet them where they are, I believe that that will be part of the healing process and part of, you know, us progressing forward, you know.
Can I add something there?
But collectively as well. Yes, sir, please.
Yeah. You know, when you look, as an example, like the Black Panther movement. Now, what black folk, and I think this is just human nature, they want to be attached to success. They want to be a part of a progressive movement. So when you had the Black Panther Party in its heyday, so to speak, for lack of a better word, you had Christians and everybody with afros and black leather. You see?
Sure.
I'll give you another example.
Right.
The Black Bank movement, right, when it was in its heyday, you had the fraternities and the sororities and the churches depositing their money in them black banks. See, those are universal things that we understand that we got to have.
Sure.
And that's the reason why I'm saying that we have to work alongside of some of these churches and with some of these Christians. And again, we don't have to adopt their thought processes or ideologies, but again, it goes back to the greater good of the community because we have to live in these communities.
Right.
Whether you're a believer or a non-believer, I have to live here. And
this
I want to be able
true.
To walk my car without being attacked. And if part of that is making sure that everybody on the block has some food, we're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
If part of that means that, you know, we have to find a way to get some education, because, you know, I put out a video earlier this week, dealing with some gangbangers here in Chicago, and they said that the solution was killing. And some of the responses, you know, it actually kind of bothered me, because some people were saying they were a lost cause and let
mm-hmm.
them kill each other. But with some of those young men, and when I say young men, they were very young. But if you were adopted or forced into a gang at 7, 8, 9 years of age,
right.
and this is all that you know, they don't know any better. We have to show them a better way. Where are the jobs in the community? I'm talking about Chicago here and most of the major cities that I've been visited and I've lived
yeah.
in. Where are the jobs? Where's the economic development? Where's the educational development? These people feel hopeless, and that's one of the reasons why they cling to their religion.
Mm-hmm.
You're correct. Absolutely.
They can depend
right.
on that. When they can't depend on anything else.
Hi, everyone. Can you guys hear me?
Hey,
yes,
ma'am.
Nicole.
Hi. I don't know who's all on the line, but hello to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
I just wanted to jump in a little bit on that and piggyback on what you said about the gang life, Kim, because I did see some of the commentary from that thread. And I think this is one of those things where I'm kind of on the fence with, because, you know, I do know people that express that type of thought process, and in a lot of ways sometimes I do feel like they're a lost cause, because some of them simply do not want to make that change. It's as simple as that. I mean, when you're talking to people in their 30s and 40s and they feel like they've done, you know, way too much, and the, you know, the system has given up on them, this, that, and the other, and, you know, a lot of them don't see the hope, but then some of them don't even try. So it's like,
but some of them
with people
can't.
That are not willing to try.
Yeah, and
but
some of them are trapped by that too.
Because I know some that came out of them.
I mean, I know some people that have, you know, walked away from the lifestyle and they've made the choice
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
do the right things. And I think a lot of the times we pacify these people in ways that, like alternatives that you guys were talking about earlier with.
Mm-hmm.
The churches and stuff. It's like, why can't we teach people to be independent and responsible for their own lives? Why do we have to teach them? I mean, I'm not saying that I'm not for helping people. Some people do need help. But I do feel like some people, once you get to offering them an alternative outside of religion, then that puts more responsibility on them, and they don't
mm-hmm.
know how to handle that if they've
mm-hmm.
been relying on God for 20, 30
right.
plus years.
Exactly, and I agree with that. And you gave a key point there. They feel that everyone or the system has given up on them. Well, some of these people, we have to teach them basic life skills.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that. Their parents didn't have that. And, you know, it goes for, you know, and it kind of goes hand in hand with some of these generational ills that we're dealing with
mm-hmm.
in our community. Now, some, you know, there are a few that are lost causes. And, you know, again, I talked about pathological behavior and sociopathy earlier. And, I mean, we can talk about that a little bit more in depth, you know, a little bit later on. But the thing is that with some of those people, if you show them that you care and you show them a better way of life, you know, again, with the training, whether it's education
mm-hmm.
or trade or something like that, and show them how they can be independent and how they can live a life that's better than the one that they have. And so, you know, they won't be, you know, singing, you know, the Ghetto Boys, My Mind's Playing Tricks on Me. They won't be like
mm-hmm.
that.
You
know,
right.
You know,
well,
looking
then,
over
well,
their
see, children, is it? So that means that means there's a lot of work that we need to do on our part, and if we have people in the free thought community that's not really showing, you know, the effort that's needed to even offer these type of services to people, where do we go from there? How do we get people offline and out into the community?
Mm-hmm. Let's go visit prisons.
Well, that's
prisons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get a bunch of people and, you know, go visit.
I think if you don't have an alternative, you really should leave the people alone. If you don't have alternative structures, leave them alone.
No, but that's what we're saying. That's exactly what we're saying. What we're trying to say is on our side, we're trying to build some things up so that we will be able to offer an alternative. But,
right.
you know, and I understand what you're saying. You know, let's not go over there and agitate them and get them riled up.
Uh-oh.
And then they have, and because, you know, after, and, you know, but this is what the young man is saying, because if we go over there and we agitate them and we take that, or they walk away from that belief system, now they have nothing. And if they
right.
have nothing on top of nothing, what are they going to do? In many
right.
cases, they're going to project, and it's going to exacerbate an already detrimental and bad situation.
Sure.
And I'm with him on that because I've said that before. I've said when these people, some of these people leave religion and they have nothing to hold on to, nothing to hope for, then what? Are we willing to deal with the consequences of that? And what do we have to offer in place?
Right,
are
like a job training or GED
exactly.
or something. Right.
Correct.
Exactly. And I've been saying that for a while, sir. So, I mean, you know, we're kind of on the same page here. You know, some of our approaches
mm-hmm.
may be a little bit different, you know, and that's okay. That's okay. Because, you know, some of the people you can reach, I can't reach. Some of the people that I can reach, you can't reach. But it's about us working together.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What about the leadership in the communities, too? Because, you know, coming out of the religious forum, you have pastors that are like, you know, these leadership, they have a certain level of leadership in their communities that people kind of, you know, depend on in a lot of ways.
Exactly.
So I think
yeah.
it's going to take a stronger stance on our side, too, because there's a lot of
mm-hmm.
a lot of people that, you know, walk away from religion and they feel like, okay, you know, there's still more work to be done, you know. They feel like, well, all right, there's no God and that's cool and where the party at? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about that earlier. You know, where the party at? People want to party and bullshit and all of that. And, again, you know, you know, if they didn't get it the first time, you know, with a lot of them that made choices to party and to do whatever it is they wanted to do as opposed to getting their education, I'm going all the way back to junior high school and things that I saw. And, you know, they teased and made fun of us that were into our education, but then they made other choices. So now as adults, when many of us that, you know, paid attention in school and tried to get good grades and do what we needed to do, our lives in many cases, they're polar opposite. And some of those same people, you know, they're trying to understand or figure out why their lives went the way that it went, but yet they still have not necessarily left that mindset because why? They still want to party. They still want to bullshit. They still want to do all of that. And, again, Einstein said that the definition of insanity is doing the same things over and over and expecting a different result.
Right.
They're just grown in doing it now as opposed to being young and not knowing any better. Now you're older, but they haven't made the connection. You know, so that kind of goes back to something that Cheryl brought up earlier about, you know, making the connection, you know, and watching the pendulum swing, whether it's a, you know, an acute swing or an obtuse swing, it's still a swing, and trying to figure out what's happening in between and what's happening in that gap and how to fill that gap. And that's what we're trying to do, and that's where we're trying to go. And it's just, it's interesting, but it's a lot of confusion out here. And with a lot of these people, again, you know, we're going to have to get back into the community, and we're going to have to get our hands dirty, and we're going to have to be able to find a way to offer an alternative, you know, as the gentleman said. And, you know, I've spoken about that, you know, several
Very
times
true.
Over the past year and a half.
Well, absolutely.
And we have to do something, and, you know, and I understand where he's coming from, is that, you know, we're doing a lot of talking, but where is the organizing? And if you go back to a show that I did back in June, or was
mm-hmm.
it June or May, but it's called What is Free Thought, and you can find it in archives, you know, and I'm calling for a think tank, you know, on Black Free Thought, you know, side in the Black atheist community. We need to have a think tank of thinkers, and we need to implement and develop a plan. We need to do this,
right.
and it's imperative. The problem is no one wants to step up to the plate. And that's the issue that I'm dealing with, and that's why I'm getting frustrated yet again, because we have people that are knowledgeable in our community, and there are people that have come before us. See, free thought and atheism, this is not new. This has been going W.E.B. Du Bois, you know, Byron Rustin, you know, all of these people. You know, Alice Walker, you have all of these people. This is not new. This is not new. So, I mean, where do we go from here? And this is why I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated and I'm agitated.
Extremely where do we go? What's the next step?
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
One of the things is that when you look at how black folks organize themselves to try to take some action, the difference between what's missing, what's in ours, and what's in the larger community is this. Normally, they bring stakeholders to the table. Now, what does that mean? Stakeholders. Not necessarily just individuals, but they bring together those people who represent organizations, institutions, and who can bring a resource to bear.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
exactly.
When you look at our roundtables, and this is no, most of us are just individuals talking and doing our own little things in the community.
Right.
But when you're talking about strategic organization, right,
mm-hmm.
and dealing with national issues,
mm-hmm.
right, you have to have individuals at the table who are tied to national networks, who have access to resources, who represent institutions, right? In the absence of that, right, I think it, for instance, like the Black Thinkers, in the absence of that, you have to pick an issue or pick a community development idea and just work on that thing.
Exactly.
Mm.
You can't be all over the place.
Right, because you'll never get anything done. You have to be focused. Yeah, and I mean, I understand exactly what you're saying. And, again, you know, we have to get better at this. We have to get out there. We have to organize. We have to implement. That is correct. We have a caller from 615. May I ask who's calling?
This is Judy.
You gonna have 7 kids.
Hey, I just wanted to put my 2 cents in about universal giving as opposed to segregated giving. I think if you give back to the world community as opposed to just focusing on one community, you eventually give back to your own community. Things like Red Cross, UNICEF, United Way. If you can work with any group or organization that covers everybody, regardless of race, religion, or creed, you actually send back more good your way. And anything that ends in segregation or it's just us against them is always doomed for failure because you put up a wall between your group and anyone around you who could help your group.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's
I'd like to offer an alternative to that if that's possible.
Please.
Yeah. Okay. Let me say this. From a historical fact, that's just not true in this sense. We know. See, that's what I said. The facts are the facts. The money that goes to Red Cross, the money that goes to those larger, quote-unquote, global philanthropic organizations, that money does not trickle down into our communities. Now, that's a fact. We might want it to do that, but let's just deal with the facts. All right.
And you're absolutely correct. A lot of that money, a lot of those resources do not necessarily make it back to our community. But, again, if we organize and galvanize some support, we can hold these organizations accountable and call them out.
Well, the United Way, as an example, they do give back to the black community. When I lived in Chicago in West Pullman, the United Way was everywhere. They offered clothing for people who needed. They had utility services for those who were about to get shut off. They had shelters for people who needed it. They also offered mental health counseling on sliding scales for people in the community who needed it.
Yeah, but we want the middle class jobs that they create.
That's just a hand out. That's not a hand up.
Yeah, we want the middle. We want
the organizations. there are a few
we want those middle class jobs that they
create. They're supposed to do, but you still have way too many out there that are not doing what they're supposed to do. Now there are some, you know, in any, you know, we can give many examples. You know, there are many, there are some organizations that are doing what they're supposed to do. There are some, and you know, you gave the example of the United Way, and that's excellent. But with the Salvation Army, that's a different story, because there have been some stories coming out about the Salvation Army over the past several years with them and somewhat some of the forced religion on it. But, you know, in most cases, they do try to give back to the community. And they did just open a community center here in the city of Chicago, over here on the west side in the Austin neighborhood. But the question is, and I haven't done a lot of investigating on this, so, you know, I'm not quite sure, but, you know, I wonder, you know, are they indoctrinating these children? Because we've got to remember, you know, with Salvation Army and things like that, those are faith-based.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And for instance, I'm a donor. I give blood. The blood that I give, they can go anywhere regardless of who's needed. Whoever is in need gets the blood that anyone donates.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And that's right. You know, and I had to have a blood transfusion a few years ago. I don't know where that blood came from, but I thank the person who gave it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the end of the day, I did not die due to that blood transfusion. I had to have two, as a matter of fact. And, you know, I thank the person. And, I mean, again, you're right. You know, that blood, you know, when you give that blood, you know, you're not saying, well, I only want this to go to this particular culture of people. You're giving blood to help save someone's life. And, again, there
and UNICEF, it gives money to anyone in any poor nation. There are a lot more poor nations who are worse off than people in the black community. No matter how poor it is in the U.S., I don't think anyone can argue that there aren't children in Africa, Asia, or South America who don't have it worse than we do.
Yeah, but
how
no matter
about, how did it get
oh, fall back, Africa, fall back. You know, no matter how bad my neighbor's lawn looks, I got to mow my lawn first. I'm not going to go over there and clean up their neighborhood. Clean up this one
first. How about us sort of focusing our efforts and raising a little bit of visibility by giving sort of a directed giving to someone in Africa or some impoverished nation? Who's heard of Kiva? The Grameen Bank?
I have.
Uh-huh.
Yep, I have.
Yeah,
it's an atheist organization, too. People didn't know that. Kiva is an atheist organization. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, what if we somehow begin to bring more people into our group that aren't members of the free thought community, you know, maybe find some sort of a way to reach out and have a united effort.
Well,
I don't know how that.
That's what's called an institution. When you institutionalize it, the mission drives it. So when the mission drives it, you will get people to come. That's exactly the approach to take.
You know, I mean, make it so that it's benign and help people sort of understand that it's not, you know, we're not here as specifically, well, let's see. Well, it would say something about free thought, but put it under an umbrella of united giving. You know,
exactly.
I don't know how that would get started, but, you know, maybe a Facebook page or something. I don't know.
Right, no, and I'm right with you. You know, it's like having what you're talking about is like having a holding company and having different companies fall under that, you know, holding company. So the holding company would be like United Giving. And one of the links that I posted today, they do have a United Giving charity that's atheist-based, you know, and it is out there. You know, the only thing is that, you know, in our community, it's like herding cats. Trying to, you know,
organize and
get people, and it's very difficult. It's very difficult. That's on both sides of the equation, but especially on this side of the equation, and this has just been my experience. And, you know, like I said, we're going to have to get better. We're going to have to get more organized. We're going to have to get more entrenched, you know, in the communities. But we're going to have to sit down, especially the leaders in this community. We have to sit down and talk about these things. We have to dialogue amongst ourselves so that we can try to bring forth these programs and develop these programs and help the people in the community. But when you have so many different people going in so many directions, that's why we're getting nothing done. And, you know, it's going to be a time where you're going to have to kind of, you know, acquiesce, if you will, to someone else's idea and put yours on a back burner. But we can revisit that and bring it back to the forefront. You're not going to always be able to get your way. And that's one of the issues on this side of the equation is everybody thinks that they're right.
Let the universal ideas guide that organization, education, economics. See, just let those things guide that. One of the things that I'm involved in is we set up a private equity fund, a private investment fund, and we do micro lending in Africa.
Right.
And with the focus on women entrepreneurs.
Uh huh.
Right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, we're not giving money away, so it's economically based. And I think, you know, as organizations in the black community, they don't have any money to give away, you know.
Right.
But I do think you do have money to invest into economic projects so that they can be self-sustaining. I think if you go that approach, you'll get more buy-in, you know, from individuals and people who do have disposable income by going that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's great, you know, and we need to have a presence in other countries, and that's wonderful. And, you know, but I guess, you know, one of my questions is, what about this country, the one we live in, the one, you know, the neighborhood
right.
we live in? And, I mean, I guess that's what's closest to my heart because, you know, when I go out to my car or I'm walking down a block or whatever the issue may be, and I see some of these young people, sometimes, you know, I see the vacant looks. I see the looks of hopelessness. You know, sometimes I'll see parents walking with their kid, and I'll look at that baby, and that baby just looks so unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I want to say to that baby, what's wrong, honey? You know, and, I mean,
mm-hmm.
and you know, number one, you can't be talking to other people's children, but number two, you know, it makes you wonder what's happening, what's wrong in that particular household. And so, I mean, it's about rebuilding individuals, rebuilding families, rebuilding our community over, mm-hmm. you know, in this country as well, in addition to the other countries, because I'm not, you know, foregoing or forsaking people in other countries because they need help too. And they
right.
are in a lot worse shape than we are. And
yeah,
one of the issues.
Inside, right.
Exactly.
When I grew up in the 70s, it used to be really commonplace. You know, neighbors stayed there. They didn't move all over the place. You knew who your neighbors were. You helped your neighbors. Even when I was a kid, if any of the mothers saw that you were doing wrong, not only would they discipline you, they'd tell your mother what you did, and then your mother would discipline you. Everyone looked out for everyone else, and I think that's what's missing in the black community.
Well, yeah, that community spirit, you know, or that community, you know, togetherness, you know, we used to have that, you know, as they said, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, if you will. And it used to be a point, because I remember way back, you know, even though I was a little girl and, you know, watching
mm-hmm.
some of the, you know, TV shows from back then, they would have rent parties and they would take up collections to help
mm-hmm.
someone, to help people in the community. If, you know, the mom has to work, if it's a single parent home and the mom has a couple of kids, the neighbors would watch the kids after school until the mom got home from work.
Mm-hmm.
And back then you could trust, you know, some neighbors with your
mm-hmm.
children, you know. And not all neighbors. But, I mean, you know, we used to have that togetherness. And a
yeah.
lot of that has passed by. And a lot of people have the mentality of, I have mine, now you
mm-hmm.
have to get yours.
I think they've forgotten.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to break in, but I just wanted to say what you're saying is absolutely true. But we have to kind of look at how situations change in time, and
mm-hmm.
that is, I hate to say this, it's wonderful and desirable, but I don't think we'll ever see that again. And we all know what it was like, But working with what's happening now, the whole world has completely changed. I mean, look at the prevalence of social networks, which means that you don't have to see anybody's face. You know?
Right.
I mean, look at how the world has changed. Look at how it's changed. The world has gotten bigger, and it's gotten smaller at the same time. So it would be wonderful to have neighbors that you could count on, but you're lucky if you know your neighbor's name anymore.
That's right. That's right. You become desensitized and detached, and that's absolutely correct, and I agree with you. I don't believe we'll ever see those neighbors
again. No, we won't see that
again. We can always hope for it, All right, we got area code 314 on the line. May we ask who's calling?
Yes, this is Pianchi. I overheard someone talking about the aid in Africa. And
no, we were talking about giving aid to Africa. We're not talking about aid in Africa.
Oh, no, not AIDS, the disease.
No, I know.
No, I meant, no, I said aid, A-I-D. I
aid.
Said AIDS.
Okay, gotcha.
Oh, okay.
And I think you got a caller. You got a caller on also online. It's very knowledgeable. But I think that the aid that goes there now is toxic. It needs to stop. What Africa countries need is investments. They don't need any more donors and aid. You know, I see black church groups taking winter clothes to some of these countries and things of that nature. And another point, you as a group of free thinkers are non-believers, but for you to take up a cause and then require those who want to also take part in that cause to have to adhere to your belief or non-belief.
Again, Pianchi, no one said that.
Well, let me finish
you
it then
are
correctly,
assuming
please.
That. No one said that you had to be a non-believer or an atheist to work with our causes. If you've been paying attention, I've been saying for the past year and a half that we have to work alongside the churches. I just don't have to adopt their thought process and ideology.
Well, I understand that, but see, you're assuming that I was talking about you. You didn't let me finish what I was going to say.
Okay, please finish.
And that is the position that many organizations take up, and I think that that is really wrong. Thank you.
And I understand, but Christians do the same thing. There are some Christians that you have to be a Christian in order to utilize their resources and their services. Mm-hmm. And before they'll feed you, you have to allow them to pray for you, to lay hands on you, before they give you clothing. And it's wrong across the board, whether it's on this side of the equation or the other side of the equation. So I agree with you there, Pianchi.
Do you see that as an entry point, though, to raise visibility and to help everyone, help the larger community understand that, you know, we don't have forked horns or whatever. I mean, do you think that something like an effort like that, not absent something that we're starting on our own, but if it's possible for us to unite around becoming a member of a giving organization and, you know, make it known that here we are, we're giving this as a united thing. I mean, even work with a big church somehow, even. I don't know.
I'll
does anybody think about that?
I'll give you an example. Like, what the free thinkers have to do is take an internal assessment of who you have as members, right?
Sure.
What skills they have, whether they have resources, whether they have a skill that they can bring to the table. And then you determine where would you be most effective. And then let's say it's education. Then you attack that. Let's say it's economics. Then you attack there. So I think that's where you start with that. What if all the free thinkers are on aid? I'm not saying they are. But what if they're all on aid? Well,
all
you know you probably shouldn't be involved in no economic project because all y'all on aid.
Right, right. And I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I've spoken in the past about because, you know, I have IT skills. And what I wanted to do was put together, you know, in a program in which we can educate some young people and help them attain those skills, young and some older people, because I'm not going to discriminate against someone because they're older. If they want a change in their lives and they want to be productive, hey, come on. And I wanted to train them, but see, one of the issues is after you train these people and you send them out for jobs, they're told that you don't have the experience, so we can't help you. And what I wanted to do was, in addition to training them, but have a part of it as they work a year or two for me, and it wouldn't be, you know, they wouldn't make the same type of money that they would make in corporate America, but it would be teaching them quality of service. It would be teaching them how to interact and interface with customers as well as each other and third-party vendors, which are customers, you know, your coworkers is another customer, and teaching them things, you know, uniform, you know, polo shirt, khakis, but you have to be clean every day. They come to work. But teach them these things so we give them the year or two experience, then move them over to the consulting side and then release them to corporate America. That's what I want to do. But it takes money.
And people.
Donating, you know, donating time and resources. Because, see, this is the problem that I'm having personally. I can't do it by myself.
No.
I need other people to help me, but also some of the people that, you know, are willing to help, they're wonderful, and, you know, I take it all in stride and we go from there. But there are some other people, it's like pulling teeth. And I'm like, you have this skill set, but you don't want to do anything. It's, it's just, it's amazing. It's amazing. And that's where it goes back to the apathy, and it goes back to, you know, the bandwagon.
The bandwagon.
And, you know,
right.
How it all ties in together. And people that are, you know, organizing and leading these groups, and it's extremely frustrating. It's extremely
I think, sister, you, just like when we talk about, you know, engaging the Christian community, maybe you engage in a group of free thinkers that ain't going to do nothing, so you need to remove yourself from them.
Can you repeat that, dear? I'm sorry. I missed that last
part. Well, I said, when you said, if you engage with a group of people, I don't care if they're free thinkers or no thinkers. If they ain't going to do nothing, they ain't going to do nothing. So you need to organize yourself with somebody who is going to do something.
Exactly. Exactly. And that was the point. That was the point. Working with the people that
get everybody to come to the meetings.
That's right.
I think they only show up for the snacks, but that's another thing.
Which are nice, but, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
if you could just have an all hands on deck meeting or something.
You know what's interesting? There are some people in the community who will admit, for one reason or another, why they cannot be involved, but still would like to engage with people within the community and the social construct of it.
Exactly.
How do we cater to both types of people, for closeted atheists or agnostics who, you know, want to be involved but really can't for one reason or another?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with people like that?
Right. And
ask
that's the reason
money.
Why. Exactly.
Ask for some money.
Get some money. That was just what
you
said.
You said get some money?
Yeah,
get
ask
some
for
money.
Some money.
Y'all give us all of your money.
That's right. Cut a check.
We need money. You know what? It's interesting because I had a discussion with a friend like that a few days ago, and it was interesting because it was like, you know, what does the money go to? Why do we need to mandate dues? And there's not any other for people that want to be involved. And I said, well, that's because, I mean, it's going
to
take money to – you know, get some of these efforts
out.
You know what I mean? Like, it costs to be able to do certain things within the community. Where is this money going to come from?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can ask for donations and things like that, but we have to start it off with something. We have to be able to give ourselves, you know what I mean, a big, you know, not in the sense of, you know, making people like the church, you know, give your 10% automatically, but whatever you can give. If you've got $5, $10, whatever, you know.
Right.
If you just want to be involved and you don't really have the money, you know, the only way that we're going to get things moving is to get people involved. It's going to take the effort of all of us that want to see these changes.
Right.
Exactly, and I agree with the whole part of it, homie. You know that, but one other thing that I want to say, you know, also there are some people out there that have nothing to give, and I understand it, and that's the reason why I say take 5-10 minutes out of your day and send an encouraging email or a note or
sure.
to the people that are out here.
Sure.
If you don't have it, you don't have it. That's, you know, so some people are having a hard time. We understand that. But the thing is that, you know, what you can give is a word of encouragement, because sometimes that word of encouragement goes a long way. Mm-hmm. Because when I say there are some of us out here who think that we're by ourselves and that we're invisible, that's the truth. And I deal with that. I deal with that personally daily, and I'm just fortunate to have a good group of people around me that I can talk with and converse with, you know, on, you know, a daily or a consistent basis, and that encourage me and I encourage them. But that encouragement, it definitely goes a long way, and that's the reason why when I have, you know, different people on the show, you know, like Norm or Sativu or, mm-hmm. you know, Annalise or any of these people out here, that, you know, they're taking some hits for us. And I like to tell them thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for, you know, what they're doing, what they're putting forth. And,
yes.
you know, send some notes. Let them know that you care. Let them know that you're watching. Let them know that you understand. I mean, if that's all you have is the ability to send an email, they appreciate that too. Sometimes
sure.
those words of encouragement mean more than the donations, even though the donations help. But I'm just
right.
saying, we don't want you to stop giving, but, you know
yeah,
the words
exactly.
of encouragement.
No,
that's
we
amazing.
Need that collection
right.
plate. Though ain't nothing changed with the collection plate passing
right.
on the way.
Right, right.
Kim.
Exactly. Yes, sir.
Do you have a PayPal account set up that people can donate to that listen to the show or visit the website?
Actually, I do, and I will post that
oh,
PayPal
you do?
Link. Yeah, I have a PayPal link for Black Nonbelievers of Chicago.
Oh.
And I will post that on my wall a little bit later, and so that way people can go ahead, and I need to put it on the website as well, so that people can donate, you know, via that.
Oh.
And, again, this is one of my members, and she'll tell you that, you know, I put forth a lot of effort, you know, during our meetings, and, you know, we make
Absolutely.
Sure that
you,
and
yeah,
so, you,
know,
you know
what?
God,
you're doing a lot of research. You're doing a two-hour show on Sunday. There's a 2-hour show every other Saturday. You're doing more shows. And, you know, there's nothing wrong. I listen to a lot of podcasts. And within a 51-minute show, I'll listen to Driftglass and Blue Gal say donate to us 5 times in a 51-minute show. So, yeah, you could definitely say it twice in a 2-hour show or even 3 times.
Sure.
Go and hit that PayPal button and donate something. And, you know, put it on the website, the Facebook, throw it on the Twitter, and, you know, I'll copy and paste it onto mine and spam it out. You know, I'll use the word spam, throw that out there. And, you know, 3 thoughts that I got. This was over these past minutes. This is a very fast-moving conversation. I'm way back at the beginning with some of those thoughts, like that idea between what's that space in between the apathy and the bandwagoning?
Right,
like,
right.
I don't really know too much on the free thought side, but on that religious side, I think that space in between there, it's got to be that giving up individualism. There's a cognitive dissonance, you know, like you're going to, you know, on that religious side, like if you're going to jump on that bandwagon, like, oh, they said we're going to defend families, so I got to go down to Chick-fil-A and eat a sandwich, even
right.
though you know you have gay friends that you would like to see have equal rights. But you got that apathy light switch clicked on and said, ah, let me just go jump on that bandwagon and go grab a couple sandwiches from Chick-fil-A.
It just doesn't take any action on your part to be apathetic or to join a bandwagon, which is what I kind of started off with. You know, and where
right.
what's happening in those two sides of inaction? What's the thought process? Who are they? What do we do to
right.
reach them?
I think that's just the deal. Is that there is no thought process. That's what the apathy is.
That's
almost
true,
like,
right.
like a little mental privilege to just
that's
I'm going to
true.
Turn my brain off, just follow the
yeah,
crowd.
Yeah, you're
and
right.
And there's also something Kim brought up about 45 minutes ago in the show. She was talking about the numbers of religious people going down and free thought going up, which I'm thinking that got my mind going. Like over
mm-hmm.
like if that happened, that trend continues over 4 or 5 decades, maybe even just 3 decades. That would be good for the national economy. Less people just throwing money in the collection plate so Creflo Dollar can get some new alligator shoes. That's just
exactly.
more money in people's households. And these are poor people's households. You know, I'm going to pronounce that correctly there. Poor people's households that are putting less money into that church, spending less money on church
Absolutely.
Clothes for their kids. You know, go buy some brand muffins. Put something into your house. And, you know, and that would be and that churches would lose members. They wouldn't be able to occupy that property that they're running up, that they're sitting on, not paying taxes. Businesses can move on to those properties, and then those people that are not putting money into the church place, they can go work at those businesses and bring in more economic prosperity. So that's my happy thought that I got from Kim putting out those numbers that, you know, religion's going down or free thought's going up. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's been a fast moving conversation. It's been fantastic.
But that ties into the apathy, and you know, we're basically the apathy, because with these churches collecting all the money that they collect, why have they not reinvested in their members, reinvested in the community? Because it's only the pastor's county and his inner circle that are benefiting from that. And also to touch on another point that you made when you were talking about the numbers going up in the 30s and 40s, non-belief was growing somewhat thin as well. And what happened is they started that fear-based mongering again, and it was the fear of communism. And so in the 50s, that's when they basically reinforced religion again, and that's when they added "In God We Trust" to the coins, and that's going to be on one of our series when we start talking about symbolism. When they added "In God We Trust" to the coins, when they added God to the Pledge of Allegiance, we're going to talk about all of that because people need to know where that came from, and that's why the fear mongering and all of the dissent and disagreement that we're seeing now, this is all happening for a reason. It's a distraction.
Well, what you said is absolutely right. I have to give you credit going back to the 40s and the 50s. But there has been churches that have done the right thing. This don't say all of them, but they are far in between few today.
Exactly. Yeah, I saw one last year on the west side of this town, or Orlando, Florida, where they brought a student a car. I can't imagine, could this church may have been open, who knows, 60 years, 70 years, how long has this church been open? One car? Yeah, that's what you got. Where's the rest of the money?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah,
well,
see, exactly. one of the suggestions I'll make to the sister, just to add another perspective, I think if you say you're for rebuilding the community, right, and you understand that the black church is mostly a European construct, and it is a part of the European culture, and it is going to stay a part of the European culture. So I think going a route of exposing the God conspiracies, or why they got "I love God" on the quarter and stuff like that, it's a distraction from what do you want to see your community look like. Just do that work. I mean, I'm just talking a lot. I don't mean you personally. But, engage in that, and while you're engaging and giving somebody a job, if you want to then educate them about why God and We Trust is on the penny, then do it at that time. You see?
Well, no, I understand, and I respectfully disagree to a certain degree about that. I think it's important for people to understand where this came from and why it was implemented the way that it was implemented. Now, you know, whether they accept it or not, that's them. See, I'm not trying to force my beliefs on anyone, but I'm also trying to take away the excuses. They can't say that they didn't know. They can't say that they weren't told, because some of the issues that I am having as an individual, as an adult, is there were things that were not told to me when I was growing up. There were things that were not shown to me as I was growing up. And now as an adult, you know, I'm trying to learn some things that I didn't know, and I'm trying to unlearn some things that I was taught. And then in that process, you know, there's still some, you know, resentment and some anger, because it's like, I should have known this. Why didn't my, you know, family and friends and people around me, why didn't they tell me about this? Why didn't the teachers teach this? You know, it's important for that information to be out there. And just because the information is out there, that doesn't mean that people are going to accept it. And I do agree that there are some churches that are out here doing the right thing. You don't hear me bashing churches. You don't hear me saying that they're evil or anything like that. I don't do that. I want to work in conjunction with them, because there are some good people out there. You know, I've met some beautiful people in church, and I've met some of the most evil people in church. You know, and even on the side of the equation.
The beautiful people are evil, and that's where the lust can come into play. It's beautiful and evil.
Well, I was just talking about from like a practical sense. So if I told you right now, I got a roll, $1,000 worth of roll pennies for organization. I mean, from a practical standpoint, you want them, right? Because you're trying to raise money. So that's what I'm saying. So we're talking practical, not the theory side of it. So what's the purpose of talking about what a penny got on it? What's the purpose of that?
But the thing is that, again, I understand that there's a difference between practicality and theory, but this is the thing. We're talking about these things on the show, but we're also doing things in the community as well. See, that's the thing. I'm not just talking. This is not just rhetoric. I'm out here in the community and doing things.
I'm sorry.
And
let me just interject. I got to go. Is the show 2 hours or as long as
we
continue?
We're down to our last 30 seconds.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
Yeah, grab your adult beverage.
Yeah.
It's over.
Thank you so much for listening in to the show. Thank you so much for calling in and being a part of it. Those that are going to listen to the archives, which is appreciate each and every last one of you. Enjoy your weekend. And next week's show is Conspiracy Theories Part 2. Raina's RSS feed on Saturday at noon, and my show Sunday at noon, 9/11 at JFK. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Have a good one. Thank you.
Take care, everybody.
Bye. Bye.